This is Jeff Blankford. My guest today, Diana Johnstone, will be familiar to Takes on the World listeners and readers of online political journal Counterpunch. She is the author of Fool's Crusade, Yugoslavia, NATO, and Western Delusions, Queen of Chaos, The Misadventures of Hillary Clinton, about which I interviewed her last year, and more recently co-author From Mad to Madness by Paul Johnstone, published by Clarity Press, one of the subjects we'll be speaking about today. We last spoke with her in May following the French elections, and if we have time, I'd like to touch on that again today. Welcome once again, Diana Johnstone, to Takes on the World.
Well, it's nice to speak with you again.
Well, I'll tell you, From Mad to Madness seems a good way of describing the situation facing the world today, and Congress's reckless and arrogant use of sanctions seems to be its major catalyst.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one thing that they are doing as a way to weaken Trump in the one area where he might have possibly done some good by normalizing relations with Russia. So they've come up with the sanctions to show that he can't do anything useful. And, of course, as I've written, those sanctions, which are totally unjustified, hit the European allies harder than anybody.
Well, it's interesting because this is what the sanctions actually... President Obama had already sanctioned Russia because before or just after the announcement, without any proof offered, and still no proof has ever been offered, that Russia had hacked the Democratic Party emails, and so he implemented sanctions against Russia. And these are sanctions for the very same thing, no?
Well, this is just all domestic politics, you see. This has absolutely nothing to do with reality beyond the belt, as they say. I mean, this is just Washington's sordid, really degraded games that they're playing. They hardly care about the consequences. If they can join the mob in getting rid of Trump, you know, that's sort of the fashion now. You know, everything has to be against Trump, so the sanctions are against Trump. I mean, it has nothing to do with Russian reality. Nothing.
I had this idea, or the way I looked at it, that, I mean, even without Trump, while Obama was in there, there was this beginning of Russia hysteria, which began with the coup in Ukraine in 2014, which I maintained, Washington knew that Putin and Russia would be obliged to retake Crimea because it was Russia's only warm water port, and that would justify the reviving of NATO, which was almost considered dead at the time. And this also justified President Obama's trillion-dollar plan to beef up and bulk up, restore the U.S. nuclear power, nuclear weapons, and that actually Hillary Clinton was playing the role they wanted to play, and Trump wasn't.
Well, yeah, but I want to go back to Crimea because, you know, it just isn't that Putin took back Crimea. The Crimean people voted very heavily to go back to Russia, which they had belonged to really all the time before, and they're being part of Ukraine for the last half century was really a quirk, was really a sort of an accident because Khrushchev handed the Crimea to Ukraine, maybe to try to, for internal political reasons, and the Crimeans, by majority, have for a long time wanted to be back in Russia. So they had the referendum and went back to Russia. So indeed, that was absolutely necessary from a Russian strategic point of view, but it was also a very democratic move because that's what the people of Crimea wanted. And, of course, that is the sort of thing that is totally, totally forgotten in the fake news that we get from the mainstream media, which have become simply spokes voices for the war party in Washington.
I'm glad you brought up the referendum. I forgot to mention that 97% of the people of the Crimea voted for who were Russians. And what the media never pointed out was that the protest against Yanukovych, the elected Ukrainian president, only took place in the West, and the country has been very much divided, with the West being leaning more toward Europe and the eastern part of Ukraine toward Russia. And it's like a civil war in a sense that if the South decided to do something to overthrow the government, from the people of Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, Georgia, Texas, and so on, would people in California, Illinois, other states go for that? It was simply the focus was totally on protests in Kiev, which were pushed by the U.S. government. I mean, there's a five-hour film that's available now, the documentary on the internet, which shows Victoria Nuland in all her glory, our Deputy Secretary of State, and the role she was playing in overthrowing the regime, the elected presidency of Yanukovych, who, by every international standard, should have put her on the plane back to Washington.
Well, it's very funny, you know, when people in Washington, because they want to find an excuse for Hillary Clinton, go on this crazy story about Russia interfering in our elections, when the United States routinely overthrows all governments, including the one of Ukraine. And I want to say something else about Ukraine, because this East-West split, it doesn't really mean that the West is more democratic. This is an ethnic and ideological split, not a split between the right wing, the reactionary, whatever it is, Russian, pro-Russians. It's an ethnic thing that goes back to the fact that Western Ukraine has been, it was very much a right-wing place, from foreign occupation, from relations with being part of Nazi allies and so on. It's a very nasty ethnic split, and of course the West takes that up as, oh, they should be part of the West. But the fact is, if they were, the European Union doesn't want them, because the European Union already has taken in Soviet black countries who turn out to be not at all in the same spirit of Western Europe, just in order to annoy Russia. So, in fact, the European Union has already weakened itself desperately by bringing in Eastern countries that don't agree with the rest, which absolutely hogtie the European Union, because decisions have to be made 100%. And so this taking in countries is really a way simply to enlarge the European Union as a U.S. satellite, since those countries can't act except they can't make any really decisions, so they end up having to follow the United States. And bringing in Ukraine or Turkey, as the United States would like, would completely, totally weaken Western Europe. It would just wipe them out as countries and just be part of the big U.S. empire.
You know, this all reminds me of the Cold War, in which the United States was constantly building up the threat of the Soviet bear, whereas when I lived in Europe a good part of that time, or a number of years, and I didn't find anybody who supported the Soviet Union, but I didn't find anyone who was at all concerned that the Soviets were going to march into Western Europe. Even in West Berlin, people who had left East Berlin, they didn't like the communist government in East Berlin, but they had no fear that there was going to be any kind of invasion. This is something that the United States continues to build up and pretends to be the only determiner of what and who are threats. Even we see now in Korea, the South Koreans for years have not been as concerned about North Korea as the United States has been. Of course, we're trying to feed the fires there with Trump making his outrageous statement about fire and brimstone and more devastation on Korea than the world has ever seen. obviously this thing is heating up. This brings us to this point of a number of observers, yourself and others. John Pilger recently is speaking about the proximity to a nuclear war, which was thought to be unheard of for so many years, now is a real possibility, no?
I want to go back for a minute because,
yeah, sure.
You see, I think that what has happened since the supposed end of the Cold War, because when Gorbachev made a compromise and the Soviet Union even gave up stopping the Soviet Union and all the rest of it, I think what's happened since proves that this communist threat was always a fiction. That in fact, this is a power struggle between the United States and Russia when they were two victors of World War II. And in fact, it was the Russians who really won, and the United States came in, but they wouldn't have won at all without the Eastern Front. And so there's been a rivalry between them, and it's actually national, and communism is kind of an excuse, because there was never the slightest serious threat that the Russians, who had made a huge war effort and were only interested in reconstructing their country after all the damages, never would have dreamed of an adventure like trying to invade Western Europe. This is totally invented, but it was the basis for forming the military-industrial complex. And the industrial-military complex, little by little, has totally taken over the United States economy and its ideology. And all of this is proved because when communism vanished, there was a brief pause, and then we went right back to Russia being the enemy. Now it's the opposite of communist. It's going back to Christianity. That doesn't matter. I mean, whether it's communist or Christian, they must be bad. They must be against our democracy, blah, blah, blah. And that just says no matter what Russia is, we've decided that that's a big enemy we have to have because it keeps the arms industry going.
Well, it's interesting that one of the things President Obama began to complain was that the NATO members were not paying their fair share of what they're supposed to do to take care of buying essentially American military weapons. They're supposed to spend 2% of their budget on weaponry, and most of the countries would rather spend it on health care and education, things that take second place in the United States, where guns come before butter.
Well, yes. And then get back to nuclear war issue, because, you know, my father's memoir has recently been published by Clarity Press, and it's my document, but I think this is indeed a very, very educational document, because he worked for 20 years inside the Pentagon as a senior analyst in the nuclear war planning business. And it's a very cool inside story. He's never a sensationalist. It's just the facts speak for themselves. And you see how then, in the Cold War, they were planning, total destruction of everything. And as that subsided for a while, after Kennedy, when they sort of realized that that's when the mutual assured destruction notion came across, that we really can't make nuclear war because both sides will get killed. The problem is that the fall of the Soviet Union has revived American arrogance to think that, well, maybe we can do a first strike and knock them out. And so you can be sure that right now in the Pentagon, if you read my father's book, you know how, by analogy, they're doing the same thing now. They're planning nuclear war against Russia, which doesn't mean that they've decided to do it. it's always a matter of contingency plans. They're making the plans of how they could do it if they did it. Now, that doesn't mean that they're sitting there saying, aha, we're going to make war with the Russians. But it does mean that something very dangerous is possible. And, you know, if you didn't have such a reasonable, patient leader in Russia as Putin, the situation would be even more dangerous. I mean, he puts up with everything, constant provocations, insults, all kinds of things. And Putin keeps trying to be calm. And, you know, if we succeeded in overthrowing him, which seems to be the object, you don't know what we might get. We might get something very, very much worse than Putin.
It does seem that he is the coolest player in this international chess game. If one can, I mean, there's no bluster in his responses, but the Americans are really worried about, they say they're worried in the media, about Russia's influence in trying to undermine European democracy. They accuse the Russians of trying to undermine America's faith in our political system as if Americans had any faith in our political system. I mean, that becomes ludicrous. That was an intelligence committee conclusion that they were trying to undermine our Americans' faith in democracy. But that's polls have shown that the Americans don't have much faith in our democracy. But they keep making all these allegations of interference but don't provide any kind of proof. And getting back to the sanctions, I mean, the first sanctions against Russia, the Europeans objected to because Russia and the Europeans do business together for their mutual benefit, which is much better than having a war. But America has no concern other than any profits they can make from Europe and keeping them away from Russia. But one of the most interesting developments in this particular sanctions is the U.S. attempt to thwart a major Russian, European, pretty German pipeline development, Nord Stream 2. Perhaps you could tell us about that.
Yeah, well, the project would increase that, that's all. And, of course, the United States, which is always screaming about free trade and all of that, is using those sanctions precisely to prevent investment in this Russian gas pipeline with the idea that, oh, now we'll sell you our fracking gas. Now, the fact is that the fracking gas is much more expensive, much more unreliable, because the Russian gas is clear. You make a contract, it comes, there's no problem, it's not expensive. So we want to force our allies to spend more for the gas. And as somebody has pointed out, Germany depends very much on its machine tool industry, which uses a lot of natural gas in manufacturing. And if they have to pay the prices for American fractured natural gas, they will no longer be able to compete with other countries. It could ruin their whole export industry. So this is not just a slight inconvenience that the United States is suggesting. It's really a move that could wreck the West European economy. But the people in Congress don't even think about that. They don't think about anything. And this is what's frightening, is that the United States political class seems to be into a state of insanity. They cannot face reality. They cannot face the reality that Hillary Clinton lost the election. They cannot face the reality that the United States cannot rule the world. There are all sorts of realities they refuse to face. So they make up a whole fiction and this absolutely childish notion, the Russians want to take away our democracy, is absolutely idiotic. I mean, I'm sorry, it's totally idiotic. And yet you have the press and everybody talking like this. And you see, these are signs of real insanity. And yet these are the people that control nuclear weapons. And you see, the real fear is that when somebody is crazy and think they're strong and think they're all powerful, and in fact they're weaker and weaker because the country itself is weaker. The country itself is in terrible shape. People are in a bad shape. That they can, as a last gasp, use this superpower to prove that they're powerful or something like that. I mean, the insanity in Washington is much worse than it ever was in the Cold War. My father writes about this, and what they're doing is crazy. but somehow you have people around who have some basic good sense, and that good sense seems to have simply evaporated in Washington.
What you have is a hysteria in which Cold War liberals or people who would ordinarily be anti-war and critical of U.S. foreign policy have jumped on this bandwagon it's a kind of a war hysteria. And this is why it's kind of bewildering that some of our alternative media have jumped into that same bag. It's very hard to find any kind of alternative media where you will hear, for example, like I mentioned earlier in my program, Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, their report concluding that the Democratic National Committee emails weren't hacked, they were leaked because technologically, what they're accused of could not have been done with a hack, only through a leak, and only two papers in the country, Washington Times, the Baltimore Sun, published that, and no alternative media.
Well, I know, but you know, the fact is that, frankly, even if the Russians had hacked, well, that just means listening in on, which everybody, you know, now is listening on, because, suppose that's true. Suppose they listened to something and then let it be known that the Democratic Party had done something, you know, had these emails. So what? I mean, you can't say that that is the thing that determined the election. And in fact, it's nothing so terrible if they did do it, because they didn't make up anything. Nobody even is accusing them of having invented anything, of having cheated anything, simply perhaps of revealing some confidential information of the Democratic National Committee. Well, even if they did that, it's minor. It's minor as a crime, and it's minor in its effects. You can't say that that is determined the election. So this is clearly much ado about absolutely nothing. And the fact that the press and everything is they're desperate. They cannot face reality. They don't know how to deal with reality. And you know, when you have people who don't know how to deal with reality but are in possession of nuclear weapons, this is very alarming.
My guest is Anna Johnston. We're talking about sanctions and nuclear weapons. Actually, I appreciate whoever was responsible for getting information, Democratic National Committee, and John Podesta's emails, which reveal what Hillary Clinton would not reveal when Bernie Sanders asked her to do so, what she had said to Goldman Sachs. And also, as a matter of fact, more attention was paid to the fact of the emails being revealed than the contents. For example, Donna Brazil, a Democratic Party hack, provided questions in advance to Clinton before debates. People should have known about this. They should also know that Clinton made statements to Goldman Sachs that she says one thing to them and another thing to the public. People should thank whoever released those documents.
Well, yes. I mean, that's exactly right. There was this diversion by making the theoretical and probably not true Russian hacking the issue. It covered up what was actually revealed. But in any case, see, to my mind, and that you know from my book on Hillary Clinton, all of this finagling and cheating in the Democratic Party is nothing compared to the crimes of Hillary Clinton on the international scale. I mean, her number one crime, to my mind, is simply destroying a whole country, that is to say Libya. And I mean, destroying a country which is was the most prosperous country on the African continent, where there was social welfare for people, which was why I've been there. And I mean, it was one of the most agreeable places to visit in that region. And there was no poverty, et cetera. And on the pretext of, we've got to get rid of a dictator, they completely wrecked the country, murdered the leader, and have left the place as a shambles full of Islamic terrorists. And this is the kind of crime that Hillary Clinton committed, which makes all the other things, frankly, look pretty minor. But of course, nobody cares about what she does to the rest of the world. They're more concerned about what she did to Bernie Sanders. And of course, I think that's unfortunate what she did to Bernie Sanders. But I think what she did to Gaddafi, what she tried to do to Syria, what she did to Honduras is a hell of a lot worse.
I agree, and one of the tragedies is that most Americans, and I know people who supported Hillary Clinton, brush all that aside. They're more concerned with domestic issues in America, even though the world is smaller thanks to the internet. America, the oceans are far wider when it comes to Americans actually giving it, caring at all about what happens, what America does all over the world. It's obviously America doesn't. We've had the Japanese in Okinawa demonstrating for years against U.S. presence, the Marine presence in Okinawa, and they vote against it. There's never been, to my knowledge, any kind of solidarity demonstration here to get American troops out of the bases all around the world. The Americans just don't simply care.
Yeah, I know, because they can just, of course, the media keeps them misinformed about that. And, you know, how long can this go on? I mean, how long can this go on? I think, you see, I personally, I don't believe in the truth out business about 9/11. I don't know the whole story, because I think there could have been people who knew things and let them happen. That absolutely. But I think it really was essentially chickens coming home to roost. That is to say, it was a sign of hatred of the United States from outside of the United States. And that hatred is growing. And the United States leaders don't seem to care. But when they start playing nuclear chicken with Russia, it's getting very dangerous. Maybe the Americans have to be nuked before they'll notice anything is going on. I would really prefer that. That they catch on earlier.
One of the problems the world faces is the fact that Americans have no idea what war is like. It's very different. It's very different when you're a soldier fighting on foreign soil than for a country in which you're being bombed or losing civilian population. The Russians lost 27 million people in World War II, but it's something that the school children don't learn about it. They learn about the Holocaust, and for most American school children, they think World War II in Europe was about the Holocaust, what Hitler did to Jews, and the rest of the war is like a backdrop. And of course, the fact that the Russians defeated best German soldiers and actually won the war in the East, and even Churchill, everyone admitted that at the time. This is also forgotten.
Yeah, it is. Americans don't realize what they're doing because, you know, war killed 20 and some thousand Russians. It killed these people and that people. But, you know, war also leaves terribly psychological scars on people. And you see that it leaves feelings of hopelessness, trauma, different kinds of mental illness, desire for revenge. You see, war, it isn't even the material or immediate killing. It undermines society and civilization. And the United States has completely destroyed the Middle East, and in alliance with Israel. And the result, of course, is that having war waged on your soil, in your country, drives people crazy. And a lot of the reason for this Islamic fanaticism, which is horrible and insane, is that people have seen their families wiped out, have seen their countries bombed, and it moves people to have crazy reactions. We're driving, Washington is crazy, and they're driving part of the more and more of the world crazy. I think some people are beginning to realize this because it's pretty obvious, but the mainstream media and the leading politicians are doing everything to conceal the truth.
Well, for me, one of the key moments, and unforgivable moments, I should say, is when President Obama, even before taking office, said that we're going to look forward, not backward, and effectively pardon in a much more slick and sophisticated way than Gerald Ford did President Nixon for a much lesser crime. He actually pardoned effectively the whole Bush administration and all the neocons, those people who were brought upon the war in Iraq. And Nancy Pelosi, Democrats went with him, and the anti-war movement, such as it was, and it wasn't much, dissolved. And so here was President Obama, our first African-American president, doing, I believe, what he was put in office to do, was to wave a magic wand over the country and caused the American people not to say, what did we do in Iraq and who's responsible? The British had four investigations. We had none, and there was no demand for it. I mean, there was one small investigation or hearing held in the basement of in Congress, but it didn't get any publicity, and it wasn't part of a official government investigation. It's extraordinary, the blindness that on the part of the American people, willful blindness, to allow the destabilization of the Middle East, the destruction of countries, kids getting killed, not being educated, schools destroyed. And of course, you mentioned Libya, in which actually Clinton pushed Obama into going into, because he was seen to be reluctant, was unleashed all those weapons all over Africa, Boko Haram, went everywhere. And yet people say, oh, well, you can't blame her for everything. It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, well, you see, Obama was put in there to somehow this change of president is supposed to wipe the slate clean. It's like born-again Christians. Bush is out, but I'm a born-again Obama. America now is innocent again, although he took on, in his foreign policy team, some of the same people. The neocons are still there. Victoria Nuland is still there, and so it was a public relations thing. I mean, oh, America has a black president. Well, that proves how democratic and wonderful America is. It was a public relations trick, which was very successful in Europe. Everybody loved Obama. Doesn't this show how wonderful America is? But basically, Obama was somewhat more reluctant about some things. But in fact, he followed the same general policies. Partly under the pressure of Hillary Clinton. It didn't really change. And then with Hillary, we were supposed to get the next chapter in Wonderful America, a woman president. Well, there are women presidents and rulers all over the world and have been for centuries. There's nothing so dramatic about that. But the idea was another public relations thing. America has a woman president. Isn't that thrilling? And so they were extremely disappointed, to put it mildly, when instead they get this
clown. Listen, Diana, we've run to the end of the hour. I want to thank you for another enlightening, entertaining, and interesting, that's a questionable word, but stimulating discussion about get some reality of what's going on over there, over here. So thanks so much for being our guest today. Take care. This has been Jeff Blankford. Thanks for listening.